we talked to each other. And maybe it was a type of prepared speech, but regardless, Magda lifted the duffel bag holding Giacomo and started to hand it to Jake.
"You really call the vampire in that bag master?"
Donnie asked. Magda looked at her.
"Yes."
"I don't," Nathaniel said.
"Is it like a bondage thing?"
Mort asked.
"No," Magda said.
"Why don't you call yours master? Is it a guy-girl thing? Please tell me it's not some kind of male versus female thing,"
Donnie said. Nathaniel smiled at her.
"No, of course not. Damien just isn't my master."
"Then why are you carrying him?"
she asked. "Because I need my hands free for weapons," I said.
"Is he your master?"
"No." Griffin said,
"What do Ms. Fortunata and Ms. Sanderson mean when they call their vampires master? If it's not a bondage thing, is it like a real slave thing?"
"It's more the old idea of fidelity to the Lord of the Manor," I said.
"Some vampires demand to be called master by all of their underlings,"
Fortune said.
"Do your masters demand that?"
Donnie asked.
"No,"
most of us said together. Then we all looked at one another and Nolan's people looked at us too. Donnie said,
"That was a little disturbing that all of you said that."
I shrugged. "You asked the question."
"I didn't think you had a master in that way, Marshal Blake,"
Flannery said. "Jean-Claude gets the title so the other vampires don't get all weird about him marrying the executioner."
"But when you call him master, do you mean it?"
I looked into Flannery's brown eyes and told the truth. "No."
"Does that bother Jean-Claude?"
"Sometimes he says it does, but honestly, I think it's one of the things he likes about me."
"That you will never call him master and mean it?"
Flannery asked. I nodded.
"I think you're right,"
Fortune said.
"He wants partners, not servants in his romantic life. I've never known a man centuries old who wanted to be in less control of women."
"Jean-Claude is a modern kind of guy," I said.
"Maybe,"
she said, and there was something in her look that let me know had we been alone, there would have been more to say. But it wasn't the kind of information you shared in front of strangers. I didn't poke at it because Fortune was a good judge for what was public speak and what wasn't. I trusted her judgment and I let it go. I could be taught. "Show us the cell you want Magda to try to smash her way out of," I said. Flannery and most of the others were watching the exchange between Fortune and me. He, Donnie, and Griffin all seemed to understand that the conversation had stopped for a reason, but they didn't push at it. Apparently, they'd come knowing when to back off a topic. It had taken me years to learn that particular lesson. Flannery led the way to a door in the far wall. It was a different door from the one that Nolan and Edward had vanished through. Wherever they had gone, it wasn't to the cell block. I'd love to think that Edward would tell me later exactly where they had gone, but I knew better. No one alive kept a secret better than Edward.
Chapter 43. We divided up into two groups. One went to the control room where all their security cameras would be recording things and could look into the cell as well as the hallway outside the cell. The second group went to the hallway with Magda. I sent Nathaniel with Damien up to the control room because I was pretty sure that Magda was going to get out, and violence of some kind seemed likely. I wanted both of them safe out of it. Since Jake was keeping Giacomo safe, he stayed with them, and Fortune stayed there for the same reason. If we didn't have to leave the vampires unguarded, then why do it? In fact, there was really not a good reason for most of us to go down to the cells, so in the end it was just Magda, me, Nikki, and Socrates. He wanted to see the state-of-the-art cells, and he could talk police with Flannery and Griffin, who had actually been in the Garda Emergency Response Unit before Nolan recruited them. They were both ex-military too, but their civilian job had been cop. Donnie, Mort, and Brennan had always been military. One of them had even been military police, an MP, so they'd handled detainees before. Socrates got more information out of everyone in a shorter time than I ever could have. I had a badge and was technically a real cop, but because I'd never been military and hadn't come up through the ranks like a regular cop, I just didn't know how to talk like all the other cops. Socrates was great at it. They liked that he'd been a detective in Los Angeles, a real cop before his accident. They'd gotten to the point of finding out that he was in a traditional marriage with nothing that made them uncomfortable or forced them to think outside the box.
It made it all so much easier for him to find out that Flannery was married too and everyone else was single. Beyond that, I don't know, because we got to the cell block. There were two cells finished on one side of a corridor that was empty and smooth, as if it had been started and never finished. There were two more cells roughed out on the other side. Everything was painted white from ceiling to floor, so the hallway had a science fiction feel to it, complete with cameras near the ceiling inside clear bubbles that were supposed to be bulletproof. I was pretty sure that I knew a caliber big enough to make bulletproof into bullet-resistant, but I let it go. We weren't here to test the cameras out. We were here to test the cells. The doors were oversized, like they were expecting small giants. The hinges were large, but strangely flat to the wall. There were two small windows in the door, one in the upper part and one in the lower part. Both had small bars in them and were covered by a sliding metal panel. When the panels were closed, the doors were solid metal. Donnie used her earpiece to signal for the doors to be opened.
"We can't open the doors from down here," she said.
"What if you have a medical emergency with one of the prisoners?"
Socrates asked. They exchanged a look between all of them who weren't us.
"Like what kind of medical emergency could a shapeshifter or a vampire have?"
Brennan asked.
"If you put more than one new shapeshifter in a cell together, they will tear each other up," he said.
"I thought they wouldn't attack each other," Donnie said.
"Whoever told you that was wrong," I said. Socrates added,
"We're less likely to attack each other because humans smell more like food. But if a brand new shapeshifter can't get to anyone else, it will turn on another of its own kind."
"What about vampires?" Donnie asked.
"They can't feed on one another, so I don't think they'll try to hurt one another." But I was frowning as I said it. I looked at the others. "You know, I've never seen new vampires that didn't have an older one around somewhere. Will the newly vamped attack each other if there's no other food around? I mean, they don't know that they can't feed on each other unless someone tells them, right?"
"Giacomo says that other vampires smell bitter. They don't smell like something edible," Magda said.
"Okay, then probably you can house multiple vampires together and they won't eat each other. But that doesn't mean they won't be violent to each other. I mean, I've seen vampires kill each other."
"We don't have enough cells," Donnie said.
"I think these three will be fine together," Flannery said and turned to me. "What do you think, Marshall?"
"I think you're probably right, but we should put vampires in separate holding areas if possible, or have them chained up so there's no chance of them hurting each other or themselves."
"What are your cells like for them, then?" Griffin asked.
"They aren't held long enough for it to be pertinent," I said.
"What does that mean?"
Donnie asked.
"It means she executes them," Brennan said.
"Well, not just me, but yeah, usually they're executed too quickly for special cells to be needed."
"You think they can't be held safely, don't you?"
Flannery said. "I think we tried it in the States, and ended up with a lot of dead correctional officers and fellow prisoners trying to be fair to vampires, shapeshifters, and even human sorcerers."
"But you've fought to get more lenient legislation on the books in your country so that execution isn't the only answer," he said.
I nodded. "When the vampires are being controlled by a powerful enough master, they literally have no will of their own. They can be forced to kill and do other terrible things totally against their will. I fought to have the law reflect that, because once I realized they really had no choice, killing them for it seemed worse, but the law didn't give me another option. So I worked to give myself another option."
"Then you would rather not have to execute them," Flannery said.
I thought about my answer and finally said, "If I think the person I'm about to kill was innocent, then yes, I want an option. But don't mistake me for someone who's against the death penalty. Most of the people I've executed have taken multiple lives, and I believe that ending their lives saved others."
"We may have to agree to disagree,"
he said, smiling, but his eyes stayed serious. "We may," I said. The doors to the cells opened, and one was as white as the hallway, but the other one was shiny.
"Silver-infused paint," Nikki said.
"Maybe one is just a glossier paint than the other one," Donnie said.
He shook his head.
"How did you know that quickly?" she asked.
"Being around this much silver, you know."
"Then it will limit what you can do inside the cell," Flannery said.
He shook his head. "Magda is not getting in a silver-lined cell," I said.
I am wearing good boots and I can use my clothes to protect my hands, she said.
No.
She looked at the others and asked,
Do you want me to destroy the most expensive cell or the ones that is the most useful?
Destroy away as long as you can't get out, Brennan said.
Destroying it means I will break out of it.
The silver will sap your abilities and you'll be just as human as we are, he said.
She and Nikki both laughed. Socrates didn't.
That's not what silver does to us.
I will be just as strong inside either cell. All you need to tell me is which cell you prefer I break out of and which you want to keep for the vampire prisoners.
You haven't even touched the door or walls yet, Mort said.
I do not have to.
He looked puzzled and almost frowned, but mostly just puzzled.
How can you be that certain you can break out without trying first?
I know my capabilities, she said,
giving him that calm face she did so well. I knew from experience that she could hide almost any thought behind that placid mask. It wasn't the pleasant, smiling face that Fortune did. In fact, it unnerved some people because Magda looked almost totally unemotional when she did it. But I knew that she could be feeling anything, everything behind that look, just like Fortune's one smile. It was different ways of hiding in plain sight.
Mort shook his head.
I thought I was arrogant.
It is not arrogance. It is self-knowledge.
Mort stared up at her, studying her face, trying to see behind it, I think. He finally laughed.
That makes perfect sense to me.
Are you saying you're bragging is because you really are that good? Donnie asked, smiling.
He gave her a look that was a little too direct, but she had started it.
Have I ever said I can do something and not been able to do it?
She had to think about that for a second or two, and then her smile faded around the edges. She gave a much more considering look.
No, you always do what you say you'll do.
Self-knowledge, Magda said.
Mort nodded.
Self-knowledge.
Flannery touched his ear and said,
We have a decision. If it won't harm Sanderson, we prefer she try to break out of the silver-lined one.
I'll leave the choice up to her as long as we are clear that it's not an order, I said.
I understand it is my choice, she said,
still giving me that blank look that I knew could be hiding almost any thought or feeling. I knew one thing. Whatever was going on behind her blue-gray eyes, if she said she could break out of both cells, then she could.
Is there anything in the cells that will hurt Magda other than the silver in the paint?
Socrates asked.
What do you mean?
Flannery asked.
Is anything booby-trapped?
It was an excellent question. I knew I brought you along for a reason, because you ask better questions than I do. He smiled at the compliment but gave serious eyes back to the other man.
Is there anything in the cell that we need to know about before we put one of our people inside it?
What Socrates said,
I said.
We are trying to create a jail that will hold the supernatural. A regular jail cell would not be booby-trapped, and neither is this one,
Flannery said.
Promise, I said.
He gave a small smile.
Promise?
I looked at Magda. It's up to you. She smiled then and just walked into the silver-coated cell.
You can't use any of your weapons to break out because we'd confiscate them from a real prisoner, Mort said.
Understood, she said.
She just stood there calmly, waiting for them to close the door. Flannery gave the signal and the door started to swing shut. I watched her as long as I could, but her expression never changed. The door closed with a whoosh instead of a clang. I didn't understand exactly how the door worked or where the lock was, but I didn't like having one of my people on the wrong side of it. I leaned into Nikki and asked, Would just standing surrounded by that much silver hurt?
Not unless it touches our skin,
he whispered back. Socrates leaned in close and said,
It would still be unnerving as hell. Nothing unnerves Magda, Nikki said.
I agreed, but I still stared at the door and prayed, Don't let her get hurt proving this point. Chapter 44. The hallway seemed very quiet after the door shut. It was almost like that hush before a storm, or like that moment when you close the door to the gun room behind you, and you're in that little airlock room between the gun shop and the firing range, where both doors must be closed before you can open the one that leads to the actual firing line. At the gun range, you can hear the gunshots from the next room, but it's muffled both from the door and the room's soundproofing and the ear protection you're already wearing. But you know that on the other side of that last door, it's going to be loud and full of potentially deadly things. It was quiet for several minutes, so that Brennan said, "She's not getting out of there." Something hit the door so hard the metal rang. Brennan jumped, and he wasn't the only one.
"Magda was looking the door over, figuring out where best to apply force," Socrates said.
The metal rang again, and there was an almost whining sound with the next blow.
"What is that?" I asked.
"The metal protesting,"
Nikki said. A spot in the door began to bow outward. I realized that Magda was kicking the door over and over again in the exact same spot. Had she figured out the lock mechanism? Had she spotted the weakest point on the metal? Or had she just chosen a spot and started pounding at it? I'd ask her later. Nikki looked at our three hosts and asked,
"What are you going to do when she gets out?"
Donnie showed a taser in her hand. I shook my head.
"Nope, we didn't negotiate for you hitting Magda with a taser."
The door began to crumple outward where she was kicking it. Mort asked, "Would a taser slow her down?"
"Do they affect us? Yes, but not through a heavy jacket and sweater," Nikki said.
"And if the taser just causes them pain but doesn't stop them, you better have another idea," I said.
"Pepper spray," Donnie said.
"If it wouldn't work on a bear, don't try it on a lycanthrope," I said.
"We don't have bears in Ireland."
"America has bears, and it's not that pepper spray in their eyes might not work, but your chances of getting it in their eyes before they claw you badly are pretty small. Same goes for were-animals. You'll never make it." The metal door looked like a bubble was growing in it, a rapidly thinning bubble. It wasn't a question of if, but when she'd break through, and they still didn't have a secondary plan. Lucky it wasn't a real bad guy busting the door.
"What are you going to do?"
Nikki asked.
"Flashbang," Mort said.
"It would disorient her, but then what?"
Nikki asked.
"We subdue her," he said.
"How?"
Socrates asked. Mort pulled out what looked like a small black stick in his hand. One sharp movement downward, and the stick telescoped out into a baton. It was an asp, which was like a thin club, and you could use it like one. It was good for pressure points and just a policeman's little helper.
"Are you seriously going to try to subdue Magda with an asp?"
Socrates asked.
"Yes."
The door shuddered.
"You haven't tried hand to hand with one of us yet."
"No. Why?"
"When she comes through the door, if Nikki or Anita tells her to put on a show, you'll have your answer."
Socrates said it and started moving back down the hallway. He was right. If they were really going to be swinging at her and she was going to be dodging and maybe swinging back, farther away was going to be better. Nikki took my arm and started backing us both away from the door. The door didn't fall down like it would in the movies. It bowed outward, and I think she peeled it partway out of the doorframe because I got a glimpse of her hair and face, a shoulder through the opening. I was strong, but not strong enough to look at that door and think, "I'll just kick it until it breaks." That was like superhero strong, supernatural strong. Donnie, Brennan, and Mort had their asps out and ready. Flannery had backed down the hallway in the other direction. Since I couldn't see a door on that side, he was still trapped with a potentially pissed werelion. Magda shoved her shoulder into the opening she'd made at the edge of the door and wall, braced her other hand on the doorframe, and just shoved. If I'd been either of the three waiting humans, I might have jumped the gun and tried to hit her then, but they didn't because we were all on the same side, or they were just too amazed at what she was doing to move. Either way, she was about to come out. Nikki called out,
"Magda, don't hurt them much."
Her eyes flicked up to see more of the hallway. She shoved one last time hard, the metal screaming with the force of it, electronics sparking around her. Mort braced and did a little bounce on the balls of his feet, some kind of martial arts training. Brennan looked like he was about to box, and Donnie was just ready. I don't know how much of it Magda actually saw, but she gave that snarling smile that I'd started thinking of as a werelion kind of thing. She looked like she was going to push at the door again, but instead she ducked back into the room. Mort stayed ready, so did Brennan, so did Donnie, but nothing happened. The hallway and the cell with its peeled open door was quiet except for the sparking of the electronics that Magda had damaged when she opened the door. Flannery yelled, "She's coming!" If I'd done the math, I'd have said that Magda couldn't have leaped through the narrow opening she'd made. But I wasn't doing the math. She came through that improbable opening in a blur that even I couldn't follow. It was more a sense of movement, like I saw her behind my eyes where you see dreams or nightmares. Chapter 45. The blur that was Magda hit the wall opposite the door and bounced back. Mort was the only one fast enough to hit the floor, so she went over him, but she hit Donnie and Brennan both. If we hadn't told her not to hurt them, they'd have been done. But not hurting someone in a fight is harder than it sounds. Pulling your punch takes more skill than landing one, but even pulled, they both went flying. Brennan hit the wall beside the other cell. Donnie slid across the floor and caught herself against the wall, but rolled to her feet and was in a fighting stance before Magda was on her again, which was pretty damn impressive. Mort actually hit Magda as she came over him to go for Donnie again. It didn't hurt her, but it threw off her leap and made her use the wall to turn and come back for him. I could see Mort as he fought with the blur that I knew was Magda. He was trying to land a blow, any blow, with the baton in his hand. I didn't understand how he was avoiding her blows, but I knew he was, because his other arm was coming up and he was moving like he was fighting. I started to be able to see her moving, but it was still like watching the after image, as if you saw where she'd been, not where she was, because your eye just couldn't comprehend the speed. Mort had to be seeing her better than I did, because he was blocking her blows. It was like they were sparring, but it was movie special effects sparring, because no one moved like this in real life. It was like watching magic. Donnie tried to back Mort up, and she got a few hits with her baton, but she seemed to have more trouble timing her blows with Magda's movements. Twice she almost hit Mort, because he moved with Magda, and by the time Donnie swung, she had a different target, one she didn't want to hit. It was like Mort and Magda were dancing and Donnie was trying to cut in. Brennan staggered as he got up off the floor from where he'd fallen. He was shaken, maybe hurt. If you don't know how to fall, you shouldn't spar. Magda hadn't meant to hurt him, but she'd trusted that he knew how to keep himself safe. Mort bent backward at the waist, so Magda swept over him. Donnie tried to come from the other side, and Magda reacted to it, but Donnie was immediately on the defensive.
"Don't try to see her, feel it,"
Mort said, as he avoided Magda's blows, and Donnie waded in and got shoved out of the way again. Donnie said,
"What do you mean, don't see her?"
Brennan tried to join the fight, but whatever had happened in the initial rush made him too slow. His baton vanished from his hand in a movement so quick that he was left staring at his empty hand as if it had literally vanished, instead of Magda grabbing it and spinning away with it. Mort finally hit her and he didn't expect to, so he connected harder than he'd planned. Magda slowed down enough that I saw her face clearly and the bright red at her cheek. He'd bled her. There was a second where he saw it too, and his face showed that he was sorry, but she touched the blood on her face and then spun toward him with that blurring speed. And if I'd thought the fight was furiously fast before, I'd been wrong. Mort could not keep her from hitting him. No human could have. Donnie moved in to help, but was sent staggering back with blood on her own face. This had gone far enough. Apparently Brennan thought so too, because he drew his sidearm and pointed it at the fight. Magda was moving too fast for him to be certain of hitting her and not Mort, and we were standing on the other side of the fight. There were too many friendly targets in the hallway. Fuck! Chapter 46. Donnie yelled,
"Brennan, stand down!"
I had my gun in my hand and hadn't meant to draw it. Brennan couldn't get a solid target on the moving fight, but all I had to do was hit him. I yelled, "Brennan, down! Put it down now!" Donnie stood up taller and was suddenly all I could see down the barrel of the gun. I lowered it and aimed at the ruined cell.
"Donnie! Down! Floor! Don't shoot him!" she said.
"Disarm him, Donnie, or we will,"
Socrates said. Flannery moved at the other end of the hallway.
"Brennan! Holster your weapon!"
"It's the only way to stop it,"
Brennan said. Mort fell to the floor and Magda knelt over him, the baton coming down. Nikki yelled,
"Magda!"
and his beast's energy filled the hallway in a skin-trembling rush. She hesitated, looking at him with eyes gone to lion orange. Socrates was already moving down the hallway in his own dark blur of speed, but he wasn't as fast as Magda. Nikki had chosen not to rush the fight, afraid he'd spook Brennan more. Nikki put his body in front of mine to shield me so that I didn't see what happened next. The gunshot was thunderous in the hallway. You forget how loud it is without ear protection. I tried to move around Nikki, but he kept his body firm in front of mine. Damn it! What's happening? He moved enough that I could see around him, but he kept one arm sort of back so that he kept me swept mostly behind him. But I could see Magda helping Mort to his feet. Donnie was holding a gun in her hand, but I could still see her own gun in its holster at her side. Maybe she had a backup, but I was betting it was Brennan's gun. Had she disarmed him before Socrates could? Flannery had Brennan up against the wall, talking low and urgently to him. The younger man wasn't fighting to get away, but he wasn't happy either. Socrates was standing beside Donnie and Flannery.
What the fuck just happened?
I asked.
Donnie and Flannery disarmed him before Socrates got there, Nikki said.
I still had my own gun out. I let out the last of a breath I hadn't even realized I was holding and holstered it. The door behind us opened and I almost went for my gun again, but it was Edward and Nolan. I started to breathe again and tried to relax, but that wasn't happening completely. We needed out of this hallway, or I did.
I thought Forrester had trained you up better than that, Blake, Nolan said.
He was angry and looking for a target. I wasn't sure why that target wasn't Brennan, but if he wanted to fight, that was fine with me.
I don't know what you're talking about, Nolan. It wasn't me who broke training.
First your were-animal goes berserk, and then you draw your gun and threaten a target you had no intention of shooting. Didn't anyone teach you that you don't draw your gun unless you mean to use it?
Magda did exactly what you said you wanted. She tested your fancy jail cell and your people. Bollocks! She wasn't good enough to get past Mort!
He yelled it, pushing past Edward to advance on me. Edward didn't try to stop him. He knew I could take care of myself, and part of him was going to enjoy the show.
She could have had me a dozen times, Captain. She was incredibly controlled, Mort said.
You fought well, Magda said.
He grinned at her, pleased.
If you can't control your animals, then you need to go back to America.
He was looming over me as he yelled. I stepped closer to him, invading his personal space. I yelled back,
don't you ever call my people animals again when it was your man who pulled his weapon on us.
He stepped into me and screamed,
I'll discipline my man, but who disciplines you for pulling yours?
I realized I wanted to fight, because part of me knew that I would have shot Brennan. I don't shoot to wound, so I stepped into Nolan. I moved forward into the fight instead of trying to calm it down because I didn't feel calm. Brennan didn't need killing, but I knew that was exactly what I would have done if Donnie hadn't stopped me. I stepped into Nolan until only the smallest fraction of space was left between us. It was aggressive and designed to make the fight worse. I was afraid of what I'd almost done, and fear has always translated into anger for me. My beasts came with my anger in a rush of energy that fueled the aggression.
We could fight. Oh, yes, we could.
I felt Nolan's beast flickering inside him, rising toward the surface of him in his own rush of confused emotions turned to rage. It wasn't the same kind of wolf as the one inside me, but they recognized each other.
Bow fucking wow.
Your man lost his nerve and pulled his gun because he didn't know what else to do, Nolan. This is why you can't jail the monsters. This is why you kill them, because you can't do anything else.
He snarled into my face.
You pointed your weapon at a friendly that you had no intention of shooting. If you were my man, I would take your sidearm and you would not get it back. I pointed my gun at an armed threat and I don't shoot to wound.
He almost snarled the next words into my face.
Brennan was pointing his gun at the threat he saw in this hallway.
Was there an edge of a growl in my own voice as I spoke?
He staggered away from that wall. He wasn't steady enough to fire into a fight. He was a danger to your own man. My men are trained to fire during a fight. I'm trained to end the fight. What the fuck does that mean?
I was damn near on tiptoes, putting my face up into his as I said,
I'm an executioner, Nolan! You wouldn't have shot him. The fuck I wouldn't! Donnie blocked my shot!
I did, sir, Donnie called.
My wolf with her mostly white fur was just suddenly clear inside me. I could see her standing with the black saddle mark across her,
the slight darkening around her eyes that was the beginning of the marks around a husky's or a malamute's face. She looked up into his brown eyes with her gold ones, and his energy rose to hers. His eyes changed to amber. Nolan looked down at the floor, blinking, then leaned back from me. He took a step back, and in a much calmer voice, he said, "Your woman still lost control." "No, Captain Nolan, she did not, because if she had, there'd be fresh bodies." My voice was calmer, too. When he looked at me again, his eyes were back to human brown. "If Donahue hadn't spoiled your aim on Brennan, would you have shot him?" "I was taught that you don't draw your gun unless you mean to use it. And if you start shooting, then you shoot until the target is stopped. Dead is stopped." Nolan looked at me. "I don't want to lose men to friendly fire." "Then you need to train them not to lose their nerve the first time they realize just what they're up against."
"I did not mean for him to hit his head," Magda said. "I overestimated his ability to fight, as I underestimated this one."
She clapped Mort on the shoulder. He winced.
"Did I hurt you?"
"I'll be bruised, but so will you."
"No, I will heal any damage before bruises form."
"That must be nice," he said.
"Yes, it is," she said.
"I've never met anyone that much faster than me," he said.
"You are very fast for someone who is only human."
He took the compliment, and I realized that in that weird guy-slash-warrior way, Mort and Magda were now friends. It had sort of been how Edward and I first bonded, too, so I understood how it worked, but I was just girl enough to know it was a little crazy. Edward stepped up beside Nolan.
"You thought your cell would hold up."
"I did."
"You thought your people would stand a better chance at subduing a shapeshifter."
Nolan nodded. "I did."
"Don't take it out on Anita or any of her people."
"He just did take it out on me," I said. Edward smiled at me.
"Yeah, but I wanted to see who would get the most riled."
"You wanted to see which of us would get angrier?" I asked, raising an eyebrow at him. He smiled at me, and it was all Ted charm, but the glint in his eyes was all Edward. That part of him that liked to know everyone's weaknesses, like an out-of-control temper that you aimed at the wrong person. I understood why Nolan was still only a captain at 40. With that kind of temper, I was amazed he'd made captain. Of course, he had just watched us prove that his unit wasn't even close to prepared for the monsters. That was worth a temper tantrum or two, just not this public.
"Are the vampires going to be that strong and that fast when they wake up?"
Donnie asked, nodding toward the cell where they'd stowed the body bags while we tested the other cell. Nolan looked at me.
"Well, Blake?"
I appreciated that he asked my opinion and not Edward's. I think he was trying to make up for the yelling match. "Not as fast, and the newly dead won't know how to harness all that super strength yet. Magda has had years of training and practice. She's not only stronger and faster than human normal, but she knows how to use all of it. You've got a suburban mom and two teenage girls. Just being vampires won't make them instant martial arts experts or give them washboard abs. That takes work, whether you're dead or alive."
"So will the other cell hold the new vampires?" he asked.
I looked at Magda.
"Will it?"
She nodded.
"For a few nights, yes, but they will learn how strong they are, and they will begin to use that strength. They will also learn how to use the other things they have gained from becoming vampire."
"You mean mind tricks," Nolan said.
"Their gaze can trap you and make you into their slave. It can turn a man against his friends and family."
"It doesn't work over cameras. As long as we don't open the door and look them in the eye, we'll be fine."
"You'll have to feed them," I said.
"We'll shove in some bags of plasma," he said.
I shook my head.
"They can't feed on old blood, only fresh. We can get rats to put in the cell.
First, the vampires are still at some level going to be who they were in life, so I don't think that shoving live rats in a room with a mother and two kids is the best idea."
"You mean they'll be afraid of the rats?"
Donnie asked. I nodded.
"I know where we can buy rabbits," Flannery said.
"They would drink the blood of animals, but it won't sustain them."
"What does that mean, it won't sustain them?"
"It means that animal blood fills their stomachs, but it's missing some ingredient that keeps the bodies from rotting. The brain stays intact and working, but the body starts to rot like a zombie's does. They still have eternal life unless they're killed, but the looking just like they did at death rots away."
"How do you know that?"
Donnie asked.
I've seen a master vampire that tried to give up feeding on people. It was pretty horrible.
Is there any way to reverse the process?
Flannery asked. Yes, but not without literally sacrificing other people's lives to replace the energy the vampire has lost through trying to go their version of vegetarian.
You mean they have to consume enough blood to kill people?
No. Literally, the ritual that might fix the damage requires human sacrifice. I've never heard of it being done successfully, but I was approached by someone who wanted me to help them do it.
They wanted you to perform the ritual? Flannery asked.
No, they wanted me to be one of the human sacrifices. His eyes went wide.
Cheeky buggers.
I thought so.
What did you do to stop them? Nolan asked.
I've already told you what stop means to me, Nolan. We looked at each other for a long minute and then he nodded.
Yes, you did.
I felt Magda move beside me and something about it made me turn and look. She was watching Brennan walk up the hallway toward us. We were also standing in the way of the only exit from the cell block, so he had to come this way to leave. But it had still put Magda on alert. I didn't blame her. Mort stepped a little in front of her so that Brennan would have to pass in front of him and not Magda. I had a moment to see how much smaller Mort was than the werelion. He wasn't just shorter. He also was one of those men who muscled but didn't bulk up much, so that he looked almost delicate standing in front of her. Since Mort was 3 inches taller than me, it let me understand just how tiny I must appear to everyone else. Brennan stopped his 6 feet of tall, dark, and brooding handsome in front of Mort.
Would you actually protect her against me?
Magda did what we asked her to do, point out the flaws in our system.
Would you stand with her against me?
She didn't point a gun at me, Brennan, you did.
I wasn't aiming at you. I was aiming at her.
And he pointed a finger at Magda as he said it.
Do you really think that you could have hit her without hitting me?
Yes,
he replied, but he was a little too defensive about it. He'd gotten spooked by Magda, and he'd let his fear make him foolish. Magda took a step forward, and Brennan took one back. Even with Mort between them, he didn't want to be closer to the werelion. Crap, we might have broken him for this duty. If he couldn't get over being this afraid of were-animals, not only couldn't he work with us, but he'd be a deficit working with any of the preternaturals.
Donnie, escort Brennan to medical. I want him checked out.
I'm fine, sir.
I didn't ask your opinion, Brennan. I gave you an order, Nolan said.
Do you actually believe that I would do anything to endanger a member of my own team?
I'll review the recording and then we'll revisit this topic. For now, I want you to go with Donahue to medical.
Sir,
I gave you an order, Brennan.
I didn't do anything wrong.
Are you going to make me repeat myself again?
Brennan took a deep breath and stood up a little straighter.
No, sir.
Donnie was standing up with us now.
I'll see he gets to medical, sir.
Go with her to medical, now.
Yes, sir.
He saluted, and after a moment's hesitation, Nolan saluted him back. Donnie saluted him and then herded Brennan toward the door. He looked back, and it was almost hate. I wasn't sure if it was aimed at Magda or all of us, but either way, it wasn't a good look. With the door closed behind them, Nolan went closer to inspect the door of the cell that Magda had torn open.
If this had been a real prisoner escaping, could we have used tasers effectively?
They would work, but their effectiveness would depend on the type of lycanthrope, I said.
Why does it depend on that? He asked.
I shrugged. It's just like some humans go down instantly, and some need a second or third hit of electricity to stop coming at you.
But if a were-animal keeps coming, you won't have time to squeeze off 3 taser hits,
Edward said.
What about tranquilizer darts?
It might work short-term if you could get the right dosage, but all drugs work through their system a lot faster than they do through a human or the real animal equivalent. If the lycanthrope is already starting to shift, then their metabolism works even faster, so once they go down, you have no way to judge how long until they wake up.
Have you ever used tranquilizers on them in your job?
Edward and I both shook our heads. I said, the dose needed to make it work also runs the risk of stopping their heart. Heart damage is one of the few ways to kill almost everything, and you don't want to be in the middle of giving a were-anything CPR when it wakes up angry with you. Flannery laughed, but it was more nerves than humor, I think.
You have something to add? Nolan asked.
No, sir. I mean, yes, sir.
Talk.
Maybe there's a way to use magic to slow down or even contain the supernatural beings.
You mean casting spells? I asked. He smiled.
Something like that, yes.
The witches I know in the United States might be able to do something to help strengthen the door. And I guess you could work a containment spell on vampires not being able to cross the threshold, but it wouldn't help you against lycanthropes, I said.
The more powerful the vampire, the fewer spells that will contain them, Magda said.
True, I said.
I would like to sit down with all of you who know magic and discuss possibilities, Flannery said.
Are you a witch?
No.
Are you a practitioner of the occult arts?
Edward asked. Flannery looked at him and smiled.
Yes.
I looked at Edward. I've never heard anyone call it that outside of books.
You haven't traveled in Europe as much as I have.
I nodded.
Okay, Flannery, if you aren't a witch, but you are a practitioner, then what kind of practitioner are you?
Here they would call me a fairy doctor.
You get your power from the fae, the little people, I said.
He nodded, smiling wider.
I'm impressed, Marshall. Outside of Ireland, most people don't know the term.
Someone who visited your country explained it to me.
Would I recognize the name?
I don't think so. Outside of Ireland, what would they call you?
Socrates asked. It was a good question.
Not much. My powers are tied to the gentlefolk of this land, literally this soil. I have to be in a country long enough to persuade what few fae remain there to help me. All the local nature spirits are very leery of strangers and strange magic.
Have you ever persuaded foreign gentlefolk to work with you? I asked.
I have, but even with them it didn't work as well as it does here with my more familiar friends.
Edward said,
Let's discuss ways to contain the vampires before they wake up for the night.
Good idea, Nolan said.
Though I think, Mort, you should report to medical too, just in case some of those bruises and scrapes are more serious than you think.
I'm fine, sir.
Nolan just looked at him. Mort grinned.
Yes, sir.
The gentlefolk may be able to help us contain the vampires, Flannery said.
They haven't helped much up to this point, Nolan said.
Flannery smiled.
I hadn't met Marshal Blake and her people. I've told my friends enough that they would like to meet face to face.
What does meeting us have to do with the gentlefolk helping with the vampire problem?
I asked.
If the fae like you, they may agree to helping more, Flannery said.
Do you mean they could have been helping this whole time and have refused?
Edward asked.
Don't judge them by human motives. It will just frustrate you, Nolan said.
Edward frowned.
I think Marshal Forrester should not come to the meeting, Flannery said.
Where Anita goes, I go.
You're not magical enough, Forrester. I'm sorry, but the wee folk prefer different energy.
If they don't like you, they won't meet with you, Nolan said.
I don't want Anita going alone,
Edward said.
You and I can wait in the car, but we can't go in if the fae say no. If we try to crash the meeting, they won't help us.
Anita is not going alone, Edward repeated.
Oh, she won't be alone. They want to meet some of the people she brought to our shores, Flannery said.
Like who?
I asked.
Flannery flashed me a bright smile. I'll give you a list.
Jake needs to be on that list, Edward said.
That surprised me. I'd have thought he'd say Nikki.
We finally got to leave the hallway. Mort went to medical, though I was pretty sure he was fine. It wasn't until Edward wanted to include Jake in our meeting that I began to think we were going to talk about more than just containing the prisoners. I was pretty sure why he wanted to include the only werewolf we had brought with us. Edward had noticed Nolan losing control for that moment in the hallway. If anyone in the group knew Nolan's secret, I was betting it was Flannery. When you work with what amounts to nature spirits, it's hard to miss a werewolf. If he had missed it, then my opinion of Flannery's magical abilities was going to be low before we ever started comparing notes.
Chapter 47. We settled in the back of the truck, which was beginning to feel like our home away from home for privacy, and I put Domino up front with the driver. Flannery told me that not everyone could go in to meet and greet, but I was free to bring more people, so I did. Safety tip. Don't admit to being able to see the gentlefolk unless Flannery asks a direct question, Nolan said.
Why not?
Nikki asked.
Because not all of them like being spied on. And back in the old days, they'd ask which eye you could see them with, and blind you in that eye.
I'm already down an eye, he said.
We'll talk about what we saw and didn't see when we're all alone and inside somewhere in the city, I said. That would be best, Nolan said. We'd already asked Nolan, and Flannery was the only one of his people who knew his secret, so we could talk freely about that at least. I wasn't sure how to start the talk, but Flannery was. Before we talk other magic, we should discuss what happened with Captain Nolan in the hallway.
Nolan startled badly enough I could tell from the back.
I don't know what you mean, Flannery.
Captain, please. I felt your wolf stronger than I've felt it in months.
No one else noticed.
I did, I said.
You felt my beast because you have your own.
I saw your eyes change, Brian, Edward said.
Nolan looked at him.
You did not.
You were so busy trying not to flash the color change down the hall towards your people that you didn't think I was standing beside you. I saw your eyes change, but I felt the energy roll off you too.
You never felt it when we worked together in the past.
I didn't know what I was feeling back then. I'd barely started working with preternatural stuff. I have years more practice under my belt, and I know what I felt.
How could you differentiate between me, Blake, Sanderson, Murdoch, or Jones?
I've worked with Anita too long not to know what her energy feels like. Same for Murdoch. The others, not as much, but I still knew how many shapeshifters were in that hallway from the feel of their energy. To be honest, if I hadn't seen your eyes, I wouldn't have been sure it was you. But I would have known it had to be either you or Mortimer, because that's the direction I was sensing it from.
All right, so you sensed me. Is it just being around so many other people with similar gifts that roused your wolf? Flannery asked.
No.
This from Jake.
What was it then?
Nolan asked, and he was a little defensive, like Brennan had been inside.
When is the last time you have been around a woman of your kind?
Jake asked.
I see my mother at least once a month.
Jake smiled gently, as if he were trying to lead him through something hard.
No, I mean a woman who is someone you could have a romantic relationship with, Captain Nolan.
Years.
Have you been around any female werewolves that are like me?
Only to fight them in other countries.
So again, no chance for romance.
I suppose not.
Then Anita is the first she-wolf you have met in years who isn't trying to kill you or isn't closely related to you.
Are you saying that my wolf reacted that strongly just because she's a female wolf?
Something like that.
He shook his head.
I'm not saying you're wrong, Pennyfeather, but I haven't reacted that way to a she-wolf since I was a teenager. Why now?
It took me a second to remember that Jake was Pennyfeather.
Jake asked,
When is the last time you let yourself become a wolf?
Nolan took in a lot of the damp, fresh-smelling air, and then let it out in a rush.
I don't remember.
Your people may be able to go for years without changing form, but your other half is still in there with all the same needs and wants of any creature.
How long since you had a date? Edward asked. Nolan frowned, and again I had the urge to smooth his forehead and see if the lines would soften. I didn't act on the impulse, but it was an unusual thought for me with a stranger. I wondered if my inner wolf was behind it.
I don't really date anymore.
How long since you had sex with someone else?
Edward asked. Nolan scowled, hands going into fists. I thought for a second we might get to see another fight, but he controlled everything but his voice, which was dark and low with suppressed anger.
That is not your business.
That's answer enough. So that long, Edward said.
I think Nolan started counting to 20 very slowly in his head so he didn't take a swing at Edward. Since I had on occasion done the same thing with him, I really couldn't throw stones.
That will make it harder to be around Anita, Jake said.
Why? Nolan asked.
Because she's a she-wolf, and your wolf recognizes that.
He stared at Jake for a second.
You're joking.
We are all attracted to those who carry similar energy, Captain.
So is it hard for you to be around Anita?
No, but I've had far more practice interacting with other female werewolves than you have. Also, I become my other form at least once a month. I feed my body's needs and wants, Captain. You, it seems, do not.
I told you, we're dying out.
and those of us who are left don't want their children to be wolves. I can't tell you about a single child of people who kept their tale into adulthood. In the 17 and 1800s, the British used the tales on our soldiers as propaganda to prove that the Irish weren't human, that all of us were just animals, so it didn't matter if they slaughtered us or starved us. We went from being a people proud of their heritage to one that began to believe the lies. What if we were just animals? Not the Irish, but us, the wolves of Ireland.
That was not true then, and it is not true now, Jake said.
I reacted to Blake's wolf like I was in heat. That's not human.
You've never been a pretty girl at a bar on Saturday night.
Trust me, Nolan, men behave a lot more animalistic than you did in the hallway, I said.
That has been true of men and pretty girls forever and a day, Magda said.
On behalf of all my sex, my deepest apologies, Jake said. The rest of the men wisely said nothing.
You just need a woman in your life, Edward said.
You sound like my ma.
Edward grinned at him.
I hope we can visit before we leave. She hears that I'm married with two kids, she'll give you even more grief about it.
If I understand it, you're not married yet. And if Ma finds out you're living in sin with kids in the house, you're the one that'll get the grief.
Edward gave a smile that gave me a sudden glimpse of what he might have been at 20 when he met Nolan. I'd never met anyone who had known him this long. I so needed to ask questions of him when Edward wasn't around. As if he read my mind, Edward said,
I think Anita is hoping to see some of the countryside with her lovers before we all go home.
My Ma wouldn't know what to do with you, Blake. Too much sin for any one woman is likely what she'd say.
I think I'm offended, I said.
I think we all are, Dev said.
It's nothing personal. My ma is a big one for finding sin in people.
Nolan's mother didn't like me much either. She doesn't hold with folks that work with the Fae, Flannery said.
He grinned at me, his teeth strong and so white that I was beginning to think he'd had them bleached, which didn't fit with his messy hair that couldn't seem to decide if it was wavy or curly, and he kept running his hands through it and trying to push it back away from his ears. It was longer than regulation for any army or police force I was familiar with, but the rest of him screamed someone who had been in a uniform most of his adult life. I wondered if the longer hair was an effort to look less like a uniformed officer. If so, he'd been in Nolan's unit a while.
What's wrong with working with the Fae? Dev asked.
My ma doesn't like anything that makes a person stand out as different, Nolan said.
Because she's hiding her differences? I asked.
He nodded. I asked to meet her, Flannery said. There are so few native wolves left in Ireland. I wanted to meet Captain Nolan's family.
Ma was right mad when she figured out he was a fairy doctor.
She got more worried when she found out I'd never married.
Nolan laughed.
She was torn between fixing you up with a local girl and keeping the Fae away from her friends.
So she'd want all of us to be married?
Nathaniel asked.
Oh, yes.
Could you tell she was a wolf when you met her? Jake asked.
Flannery shook his head.
I could tell there was something Fae about her, but not what.
Is it Fae to be an Irish wolf? I asked.
It's why they don't link any of the wolves that cut off their tails. They love their own deformities, but they would see it as a betrayal of their heritage, Nolan said.
Your tail was not a deformity, Flannery said.
You tell that to the other lads in school and their families, Nolan said.
We were all quiet for a few minutes as the truck whirred along the road.
Being different is always hard, I said. You know that vampire that tried to use me as a human sacrifice? I remember the story. His friend was a necromancer, too. They approached me initially to combine our powers and help heal the vampire.
Ah, well, I'm sorry for that, but I assure you that I only want to do positive magic. Human sacrifice does not qualify as positive magic.
Is that what they call it now?
Jake asked.
Call what?
He asked him.
Is it positive magic instead of white magic now?
Yes, actually, that is the new, more politically correct phrase.
I guess black magic being bad and white magic being good doesn't match the new social justice climate, I said.
I thought it would be. The last necromancer we dealt with felt like her magic should wither the grass as she walked, Flannery said,
and that memory stole the smile from his face and made his eyes look haunted. It was the kind of look that combat gave you, or working violent crimes too long. You were haunted not by real ghosts, but by the ghosts of memory.
Real ghosts were sort of boring, and not really a problem if you ignored them and didn't feed their power by paying attention to them. The ghosts of the past didn't go away because you ignored them. Some of the people with my psychic ability give the rest of us a bad name. He looked startled.
You think it's a psychic ability?
Yeah.
But you do magical rituals to raise the dead. If it were purely a psychic ability, there'd be no ritual needed.
I opened my mouth, closed it, and finally said, I raised my first zombie spontaneously when I was a child. I didn't do a damn bit of ritual for it.
Who was it?
He asked. What, not who. It was my dog. She came home and crawled into bed with me. I thought she was alive again at first.
That should make your power metaphysical, not mystical, but...
And it was his turn to hesitate, as if he were trying to pick his words more carefully. But what? I asked.
Maybe you are a psychic, just like a natural witch. But I've never known a necromancer who didn't need magic ritual to raise the dead.
I'm a special little snowflake, I said.
Maybe. Or maybe you're the kind of necromancer that the legends tell about.
What legends? Nolan said,
Please, Blake, don't play stupid.
Yeah, raise an army of the dead and conquer the world. Legends and myths say that witch kings and voodoo queens keep trying it and keep failing at it.
I saw some of the films from Colorado last year. You raised an army of the dead, Nolan said.
Only to combat the one that the bad guy had already raised, I said.
But you still raised all the dead for miles around the city of Boulder, Colorado, Flannery said.
I shrugged, not sure what to say.
That is legendary magic, Blake, Flannery said.
Do I blush and say, aw, shucks?
If the land and the gentlefolk like you, Blake, then that's good enough for me.
Nolan said, Flannery is my expert on magic, so if he likes you, then that's good enough for me, too.
When did you fight this other necromancer? Jake asked.
Just a few months ago. I'd never seen anything like it until I saw the videos from Colorado and what Blake did there.
Was she human? Jake asked.
The necromancer, I mean.
Flannery nodded.
As far as we could tell, yes.
You've thought of something, Nolan said. Jake smiled and looked so friendly, so open.
Anita fought a vampire that could raise zombies just last year, and you fought a human necromancer within the same year. I just find that an interesting coincidence.
You don't think it's a coincidence any more than we do, Nolan said.
I don't know what you mean, Jake said.
People hadn't seen a real necromancer in living memory. And now suddenly we've got three, Nolan said.
We killed the one in Colorado, I said.
We had to kill the one in
Flannery, Nolan snapped, and stopped him from saying the location.
I'm betting it wasn't in Ireland, was it? I asked.
That's classified, Nolan said.
And now we've got vampires spreading in Ireland, which your gentle friends should have helped prevent, Jake said.
He looked at me and there was something in that look. Were we to blame for all of this? Had killing the Mother of All Darkness unleashed some of her power to spread through the world? Or had fear of her power kept other necromancers in check, since she had given standing orders to the Harlequin to kill all necromancers on sight? Flannery nodded, solemn, almost sad.
Here in the countryside, the land is still alive in the way it's always been, but something is wrong in Dublin. Parts of the city are losing their, for lack of a word, magic.
Do your friends know what's happening? I asked.
No, only that unnatural death is spreading through the city. Corpses become part of the earth here, Marshal. They do not rise and walk as the undead.
They do now, I said. He nodded.
That's why you didn't want Anita to come over, because you didn't want to bring more death magic here,
Edward said.
Yes. And if she had felt like the other one that we killed elsewhere, I'd have done everything in my power to send her back on the next plane. We don't need more death here, Marshal Forrester.
What if the only way to stop the vampires from spreading is to kill them? I asked.
Flannery looked solemn but said, Whatever is happening in the city, I don't want it to spread further. If it's not stopped, then Ireland will cease to be Ireland.
Let's start with Anita looking over the crime scene photos and forensics.
Edward said. You really think I'm going to see something you missed?
You're the only one I trust to know more about the undead than I do.
That's high praise, I said.
I'm not a necromancer,
And I'm not about to marry the head vampire of America. I also don't have another vampire at my feet in a bag who will wake up and answer questions for the police.
Your intimate knowledge of the vampires was a point in your favor for being involved in this investigation, Marshal Blake, Flannery said.
And a point against you, Nolan said.
I know, I know. How can I keep being the scourge of vampire kind if I'm sleeping with the enemy?
Something like that, Flannery said, trying to take the sting out of it with a smile. Funny how so many people hate the fact that I'm intimate with the monsters, but they're all willing to have me use that intimate knowledge to help their asses out of trouble. It came out a little more bitter than I'd planned, but I really was tired of it.
I'm sorry for the hypocrisy, Flannery said.
Me too.
I think my friends will like your magic,